Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to the program tonight. Thank goodness it's Friday, huh? Hey, we have a guest tonight in about half an hour. His name is Dr. Bittner. What's his first name, Kathy? It's George? Dr. George Bittner. He's the founder of a company called Certichem. C-E-R-T-I-Chem, as in chemical. And it's a company that tests the chemicals for toxicity that are dumped into the environment, into containers, bottles. And Dr. Bittner is especially concerned about the health of infants and children. And he's a whistleblower, and he's catching pure hell, so we're going to talk to him in about half an hour. Okay? This hour is being sponsored by David Walterstedt. Dave's message: we progressives have differing opinions, but we respect each other. Our founding fathers understood this when they formed our government. They had experienced a dictator and gave us a system to select leaders who represent our basic interests. The president, Mr. Obama, admits he is not perfect, but it is apparent he represents most Americans. His opponent represents robber barons. The robber barons know the way to take power is to divide us by differences. To not vote because you want to punish the president is a mistake. Elections are designed to select a candidate that most represents your interests. If you refuse to vote, the barons will buy the election. The robber barons love only power and want to silence us. Vote for a person to best represent you by asking questions like these. Can I trust someone who's sending American jobs overseas, doesn't freely divulge tax returns, stashes assets in offshore accounts? Okay, it's a rather lengthy message, but David's point is it's a good point, and I appreciate that point of view. Thanks, David, for the sponsorship. Okay, we're just about worn out here at the Malloy Show from this week. I guess there's no point in mentioning the mass shooting in New York today. Empire State Building, no less. How many people shot? 11? Two dead, including the shooter? Wow. That would make news in somewhere else. It doesn't mean anything here. It had a little flurry, didn't it, on television this morning. I didn't watch any of the network newscasts, so I don't know how they handled it. But the idea that these shootings are becoming commonplace is an idea that I think is starting to settle in this gun-saturated society of ours, huh? But no point in talking about it. Guns don't kill people ever. I got an email from Keith, who asked me if I, or no, in a subject line, says the best thing about Todd Akin's comment. Keith writes, do you watch Totally Biased with W. Kamau Bell on FX? No, I don't. I don't even know the program, Keith. Anyway, Keith writes, last night he opened a show by asking Akin, if you don't believe women can get pregnant by rape, why are there so many light-skinned black people in Alabama? Shit-a-boom. That may not be word for word, Keith writes, but you get the point. I do indeed. Sure, of course. Of course. Oh, we're going to have open phones tonight if you want to jump in. 877-996-2556. Some of the craziness that has occurred this week is really, it just left me kind of exhausted. I don't know about you. Maybe you have a comment. But we'd be happy to hear from you if you do. 877-996-2556. Did you see this earlier this week? Noted meteorologist Rush Limbaugh declared that it's mere wishful thinking that Hurricane Isaac might threaten the Republican convention in Tampa next week. This is according to Raw Story. Apparently, Limbaugh said, quote, the National Hurricane Center is Obama. The National Weather Service is part of the Commerce Department. It is Obama. Limbaugh says he isn't worried. He doesn't need no stinking federal government agency to tell him about a hurricane. He said, they're talking about this Hurricane Isaac thing. We who live in South Florida become experts on it. And we don't need the National Hurricane Center. We don't need all these weather dolts analyzing this for us. So apparently he is blaming President Obama for the National Weather Service reports about the hurricane possibly hitting Tampa. What an ass. What a total dick this guy is. I mean, just complete. Mitt Romney in Ohio apparently late this afternoon says he's willing to send U.S. troops to Syria if they're needed to, get this, prevent the spread of chemical weapons. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Haven't we heard this before? Chemical weapons, nuclear weapons, biological weapons. Oh, that's right. That's why we had to go kill a million Iraqis and why we had to have thousands upon thousands of our people dead and wounded. So now Romney's going to jump on the, hey, we got to prevent the spread of chemical weapons. Hey, yeah. Apparently he was on CBS News and he told them that the United States must take whatever action is necessary to ensure weapons of mass destruction don't fall into the wrong hands. Jesus Christ. Well, I guess, it worked for the last guy. Why wouldn't it work for Mitt? Huh? Romney says, since we don't want all these chemical weapons to fall into the hands of the wrong people, that may require ground troops. Oh! He tells CBS that he would also support military action to prevent Iran from becoming nuclear or providing fissile material to Hezbollah. Oh, yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it, huh? Sure it does. You sick son of a bitch. Romney says the nuclear Iran is unacceptable and could allow America's enemies to attack the United States. Whoa, we can't have any of that. Get those chemical weapons in Syria there, Romney. Yeah, I'll bet they're hiding them behind palm trees and stuff. What do you think, huh? Don't you see Karl Rove's hand behind all of this, huh? Wouldn't you like to take a hatchet and just shunk? Chemical weapons in Syria. All right. Phone number here is 877-996-2556. Apparently, we don't have any listeners whatsoever, Kathy, who want to call in. So, okay. I have some nice stuff to do here until our guest gets here. I think I will read commodity markets reports from Zimbabwe. We'll be right back.
Each and every day, I'm an evil, rotten, egotistical snob. I'm the capo, Joe McCarthy-like Gestapo, the right-wing, foam-of-the-mouth, jack-booted slob, the democratic trashing, years of liberal bashing with the equivalent compassion of a grommet. With the IQ of a pig, I'm a fat, obnoxious pig, and the truth of the matter is, I'm vomiting. classes on fear-mongering's comeback with a face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative buckhead.
Hey, sick Republican sleazeball.
Fear-mongering.
Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Tim is in Eureka, California, listening on KGOE. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Michael. I won't take up much of your time. I just have this question for your listeners to think about.
Okay.
Right after the Second World War ended, if Hollywood would have invested as much resources and money and energy into making Holocaust films about the black folks and the Native Americans as they did the Jews, I wonder where this world would be today.
Probably where we are right now.
No, no. No, I don't think so. I mean, they're the good propaganda machine, and they could use that propaganda for some other means than they did.
Well, yeah, I certainly hear what you're saying, Tim. I think that what was done to Native people here and to the Africans that were dragged into the middle of the ocean, the so-called Middle Passage, and drowned by the boatloads. I've read estimates anywhere from 1 to 3 to 5 million Africans were killed that way. Nobody knows how many Native Americans. And, no, I get your point. Exactly. But the reason I say I don't think things would be any different is because the nation was founded on genocide and slavery. It's part of our, it's part of the, history and heritage of this country that can never be escaped. It just can't. So I don't know what could have been accomplished by pointing out a different Holocaust from the one that was perpetrated by the Nazis. Do you?
I think this generation is well aware of what's really going on, and they're not doing any pledges of allegiance to any flag. They're it's just a matter of the corrupt dragons that run this world being totally exposed, and then we'll start a new world.
Well, that's the hope.
Hope's the sham. That's what's going to happen.
Well, I know. I hate to use the word hope. I hope that's the plan. How's that?
Well, it isn't even a plan. It's just a logistical conclusion.
Okay, I hope that's the conclusion. How's
okay.
that? Okay.
Keep it up.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate you checking in. This is from Anonymous. The subject line, you asked for those who think on leaving the USA. And my emailer writes, this is a painful reminder for me, Mike. There are many moments when I do think how calming it would be enclosed in the midst of a culture where diversity is not only accepted, but also considered a very normal way of daily living. Where the main focus is not the accumulation of weapons and the need for their protection against their unknown, and that Charlton Heston is not considered a role model. A place where a human community can sustain itself due to the clear thinking and functioning a government that operates on values, values that encourage and allow human beings to be healthy on all levels. I constantly reflect on how much time is wasted here in having to digest the ills, the wrongs, the lies, not only of our minds or medical needs or personal safety. It's painful here. Which leads me to the reason I cannot leave here, for in doing so, I would have to leave behind people I know and love, some of whom are considered felons, who cannot obtain a passport or even an enhanced driver's license. Just think for a short moment, Mike, the hundreds of thousands who could or will one day simply be the servants for the striving profits of corporations, supported or given to them by the likes of well over half, if not three-fourths, of the elected that sit in those huge offices and that is called Congress. So for those of you who are able to do so, to leave, keep us close in your hearts, as we too will never forget you. No name, please, if you choose to read. All right, Anonymous. And I do choose to read. Yeah, a lot of folks who talk about leaving, like me, probably will never do so for a number of reasons, but some of us will leave. All right, we have a break here. When we come back, we will speak with for a few moments with Dr. George Bittner, who is a whistleblower and is involved in something in a lawsuit, I believe, in Texas. I think he's in a lawsuit in Texas. We'll chat with him when we come back. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This hour is being sponsored by David Walterstedt. Here's his message. We progressives have different opinions, but we respect each other. Our founding fathers understood this when they formed our government. They had experienced a dictator and gave us a system to select leaders who represent our basic interests. The president admits he's not perfect, but it is apparent he represents most Americans. His opponent represents robber barons. The robber barons know the way to take power is to divide us by differences. To not vote because you want to punish the president is a mistake. Elections are designed to select a candidate that most represents your interests. If you refuse to vote, the robber barons will buy the election. The robber barons love only power and want to silence us. Vote for a person to best represent you by asking questions like these. Can I trust someone who sends American jobs overseas, doesn't freely divulge tax returns, stashes assets in offshore accounts? Thank you, David. I got an email from a friend of mine in New York who said, Mike, this is a David and Goliath story with profound implications for public health, especially the health of infants and children. The issue here is who should be testing a critical substance for safety, especially potentially harmful to infants and kids, that enters our bodies through an array of plastic products. Who should do that testing? Why is a leading manufacturer, Eastman Chemical, maker of Tretan, suing a tiny pair of very small companies whose only fault was to provide a reliable test and make it known? Why not open discussion of the truth? Let's try that. Joining us is Dr. George Bittner. He is calling from Austin, Texas. Dr. Bittner, you're the primary defendant. Are you the defendant in this case, or are you the plaintiff?
We are the defendant. I am not personally.
But you're confident.
The two companies I'm associated with are, yes.
And that would be Certichem and Plastipure.
That is correct.
What do these two companies do?
Well, what Certichem does is devise sensitive, accurate, and reliable tests to detect various kinds of hormonal activity in chemicals, particularly estrogenic activity, that is the female sex hormone, and Plastipure devises formulations to make plastics that do not release chemicals having hormonal activity.
Why should there be a company that tests for substances that can stimulate hormonal activity inside women? Is that getting into our food supply?
Yes, it certainly is getting into our food supply. And essentially estrogens particularly affect the fetus, the very young child, and the juvenile.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is not just a problem for women.
No. It's particularly a problem for the fetus and babies, but both women and men, when they're adults, have to keep their hormonal levels within certain bounds.
I would think, if I lived in a rational world or a rational country, that the development of testing to determine the presence of these hormones or chemicals that you would be welcomed into the industrial fold. Not true, huh?
Well, I don't know if we're welcomed into the industrial fold. We certainly have been very well supported by the government to develop these assays and to begin to develop formulations for products that do not release chemicals having hormonal activity.
Well, where's the problem then? Who is taking you to court?
Well, Eastman Chemical has taken us to court because we have published papers and have made it known that our tests of one of their products, a plastic resin called Triton, releases chemicals that have very easily detectable estrogenic activity. And what's particularly important is that products made from Triton, many of them are used by very small babies and boys and girls up to ages of 10 or 12, 13, whatever.
Why wouldn't Eastman Chemical welcome your ability to test and incorporate it into their production? I mean, why wouldn't they even praise you and say thank you, Dr. Bittner, for doing this? Now let's get the testing done. What's the problem here?
Well, I guess for that you'd honestly have to ask them. We certainly would be very happy to work with Eastman or any other company to help them get chemicals having estrogenic activity out of any of their products.
But knowing Eastman Chemical, knowing that Triton does these things that your testing can discover, and it's negative to human health, why are they continuing to put the product out? And I mean, isn't there any agency in the U.S. government that can stop this?
No, there is no agency at present.
Oh, great. Yeah, okay.
Test for this. Secondly, as to why they're doing it, well, it may be cheaper to spend a couple of million dollars to try to silence us than spend a few more million to correct the problem with their product.
Now, I understand that this substance can be found in plastic, many plastic consumer products, including baby bottles, food containers, water bottles, color additives, feed additives. Is that the entirety of the list, or does it go on?
Well, actually, when you say the substance, what you're talking about are a set of maybe a couple thousand chemicals.
Oh my God!
That have estrogenic activity. What that means is that they bind to the same receptor in males and females that the naturally occurring hormone 17-beta-estradiol also binds to.
Which has a net effect of what?
It has the net effect, that's what you call estrogenic activity, and that net effect does things like cause breast cells to proliferate, causes the cells that make sperm to decrease their sperm-making ability, causes cells in the liver to change metabolism so that it's easier to get obese. The list actually goes on, and the debate with Eastman is not that these adverse harmful effects can occur, but whether in fact their product, Triton, has estrogenic activity.
Now, it's my understanding that Eastman Chemical says that Triton resins are free of chemicals.
That is correct. That's what they say.
And your company says that's not true. Is that the basis of the lawsuit? They're suing you?
That really is the basis of the lawsuit. Yes, sir. That's the nub of the matter.
Now, you're a professor at University of Texas, I understand.
That is correct. I'm a professor of biology.
Biology. Uh-oh.
That's right. Exactly.
Uh-oh.
Now we're getting deep.
Professor of biology at the University of Texas. What's the potential downside of this lawsuit? Do you stand to, or your companies stand to be sued? But do you stand to absorb damages? Are they trying to stop your process? Are they trying to make you stop talking about them? What is it they're looking for, Eastman Chemical? And by the way, before you answer, this is not related to Eastman Kodak.
No, that
okay.
is correct.
Okay.
Eastman Chemical is a separate company from Eastman Kodak. I think
all
Kodak is in New York.
Right.
Eastman Chemical, I think, is based in Tennessee.
Okay. So what is it they're looking to do to you and or your company?
Well, everything you said. That is, part of their suit is don't say nothing to nobody about our product.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly an attempt to put us out of business. The legal costs, if nothing else, which easily run between $500,000 to a couple million dollars, and that's a big amount, of course, for a small company. So the answer is everything you said, yes.
We have a break coming here. If you can hold on while we go through that break. The question I'll have for you when we come back I would assume this is being this trial, this lawsuit is being conducted before a jury. Is that right?
I'm quite sure that they have asked for a jury trial.
Right.
But the trial, if indeed it occurs, is set, I think, for sometime next summer.
Is this the sort of trial where, and this is my question to you, we'll wait to get your answer until we come back, but will the verdict of whomever hears this, either a judge or a panel or a jury, will the verdict be based on science? And let me put you on hold for a second, George, and we'll come back and get the answer to that. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, we're talking with Dr. George Bittner, Professor George Bittner, University of Texas. What we're talking about here is the company he founded, CertiChem, One of the functions of that company is to test substances that get close to the human body through consumption, ingestion of all sorts of different ways, and whether or not those chemicals or additives that go into our bodies, what the effect can or will be on a human reproductive system and probably all sorts of other systems within the human body. He is being sued by Eastman Chemical because his company has found that these materials are present inside one of their products, which is referred to as Triton. Let me ask you, Triton is a resin, I take it.
That is correct.
Is that the coating inside soup cans or vegetable cans that we've heard about a lot?
I don't know that Triton is. I don't think it is. I don't want to be contentious, but I think you're talking about BPA.
Oh, that's right.
Probably
that's right.
Rather
okay.
Than Triton.
Okay. So the chemical specifically that you're referring to, the Triton, that is it's found inside containers. I think my note said baby bottles, food containers, consumer products, water bottles, that sort of thing.
Well, it is the resin that many of those products are made from. The way you make a resin is to take a bunch of chemicals, combine them together, and that gives you a resin.
Mm-hmm.
You then take that resin, or you sell that resin to Gerber or Dr. Weil or other baby bottle manufacturers, say. They take that chemical, they add other chemicals,
mm-hmm.
And they mold it into a baby bottle, a drinking glass, whatever. And each different product they mold it into has a different set of chemicals, usually.
Isn't there a process along the line where these chemicals, their toxicity on whatever level one wants to identify the toxicity, is tested to find out if are we making a product here? Are we using substances in making our product that are going to make people sick?
No, actually, well, the answer is it's tested for some things, but not for others. It's tested for chemicals, let's say, that particularly cause cancer, or chemicals that maybe kill cells, but it's not tested for chemicals that have hormonal activity.
Mm-hmm.
And such hormonal activity, well, it can cause some cancers. Usually, that's not the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is it affects the lifestyle. It affects things like attention disorders, sperm count, uterine function. You don't die if your sperm count is mm-hmm. reduced, but you might not be happy about it.
Right, and also it would seem to me, just guessing from what you're saying, that this might result in cases of autism or learning disabilities in children who have been exposed to this in utero.
Yes, I don't know about autism, but certainly various other
right.
sorts of learning disabilities. You're quite correct.
Going back to that question, will the verdict in this lawsuit against you and your company be decided based on science, or do you think there is some politics that are going to be involved here?
Well, one never knows exactly what goes on in a courtroom, and this is certainly something. This is a scientific question that should not be debated in a courtroom. That is,
right.
You don't do science in a courtroom.
Absolutely. You do science in laboratories, and then you publish your results and have them challenged.
Right, and so this really is a suit to essentially squelch science and squelch dissent. And the only way to really know whether products have harmful activity is to have independent testing. It should not be the
mm-hmm.
firm that makes the product gets to say the only way the product can be tested.
Yeah, that certainly would make sense to me. How much public awareness is there of what you and your company is going through right now?
Well, I think right now there's growing awareness that estrogenic activity is a problem. That is, BPA has just been banned, for example, for use in baby bottles, sippy cups.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with BPA isn't the way you spell it. It's that it's got estrogenic activity.
Right.
And other chemicals that have estrogenic activity will produce the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the chemicals in Triton come out of plastic in a very similar way that BPA does, and they have about the same amount of estrogenic activity. So substituting Triton products for products that have BPA is more a marketing solution than it is a health-related solution.
Well, we're about out of time here, Professor. I hope we have a chance to talk again, and I hope that you'll keep us apprised of what's going on, either through Carl or directly
sure.
to us, because, you know, it's cases like this that, or situations like this that just drive me insane, where there is available science that is provable, is challengeable, but is provable, and once the proof is out there, why the results of that proof are not applied. This drives me insane. And I'm, you know, I didn't fall off the turnip truck last night. I do understand that corporate America doesn't want its profit train interfered with, but when it's health of, you know, you hear an awful lot of talk these days, don't you, about fetuses and unborn children and so on and so forth. This would seem to me to be one of those topics that just about everybody on the political left, right, middle, upside down, whatever, would absolutely insist got the attention it deserves. Dr. Bittner, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
All right, sir. Take care. We'll talk again. I have a feeling. Thank you, sir. Take care. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Malloy Program. The phone lines are open. 877-996-2556 is the number. I wanted to mention one more time David Wallerstedt's sponsorship from last hour. Primarily the message, because he is making a point, and it's in direct reference to the things I've said on this program, and that's very fair. I mean, I appreciate what Wallerstedt is saying. And it does give you, or should give one, food for thought. This is his message. We progressives have differing opinions, but we respect each other. Our founding fathers understood this. When they formed our government, they had experienced a dictator and gave us a system to select leaders who represent our basic interests. President Obama admits he's not perfect, but it is apparent he represents most Americans. His opponent represents robber barons. The robber barons know the way to take power is to divide us by differences. To not vote because you want to punish the president is a mistake. Elections are designed to select a candidate that most represents your interests. If you refuse to vote, the barons will buy the election. The robber barons love only power, and they do want to silence us. Vote for a person to best represent you by asking questions like these. Can I trust someone who sends American jobs overseas, who doesn't freely divulge tax returns, or who stashes assets in offshore accounts? Well, it's a good point, and it has certainly caused me to wrestle with my own opinion about this election coming. Now, this hour is being sponsored by Mark Arata his message. Support Mike Malloy's Take No Prisoners radio program, as well as Mike Papantonio's Ring of Fire, Norman Goldman's Justice is Served, Tom Hartman, and all those who speak the truth and oppose the country's move to fascism. We need your voices at this critical time in America. And thanks, Mark. I appreciate that. I would add, if I may be so bold, I don't want to add to Mark's message, but I will add to a list of progressive talk show hosts, as small as our universe is Bob Kincaid, who you can start listening to him at Head On Radio Network. Head On Radio Network. Is it Head On Radio Network? Head On Radio. Yeah, headonradionetwork.com. I've struggled with that for 5-10 years. What is it? Headonradionetwork.com. And you should listen to his program. He's on right before we are. You can stream him from White Rose, White Rose Society. Kincaid is fighting a fight in West Virginia, especially, but it's a national fight. And Kincaid is one of those people whose fight, the outcome of his fight, will directly affect every single person in America if you breathe. Now, if you don't breathe air, then don't support him. But if you breathe, you might want to check out this man's radio program, headonradionetwork.com. It's primarily on the internet, but Progressive Voices, I believe, is carrying him now. Is that right, Kathy? Progressive Voices platform. You can get his program. You know, this is the age of internet's miracles, right? Isn't that what George Bush said? So you can get to this program, and you should, but only if you breathe. So if you don't breathe, now I'm including you right wingers. You do breathe, don't you? Or have you figured out another way to do it? I mean, do you just, wait a second. Do I want to go that far to invite right wingers to his program? Well, yeah, they do breathe. Everybody breathes, I think. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Like Head On Collision, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Check him out. Just don't argue. Just check him out. Paul Ryan has done it again. And I hope this gets the kind of attention, the statement that, who's the guy from Missouri? Todd Akin's statement. I hope Ryan's latest. Now, this comes from Al Babe, the writer and artist formerly known as Al Gordon. Al Babe writes, "We on the left have been dealing with this meme that has been cast upon us by the corporate media without realizing what it actually is. We are no longer talking about the Republicans being the party that wants to criminalize abortion. They've managed to have us argue the small specifics of their dark agesness, like they're demanding no exceptions for incest or rape. Think about this. That's not what this is about. The Republicans want abortion made illegal. You got that? It's pure and simple, and we shouldn't be arguing these asinine minutiae. The Republicans want young American women to take their life in their hands by administering illegal contraceptive drugs bought south of the border or having an abortion in a back alley performed by someone who may or may not be a doctor. This is patently absurd and effing life-threateningly dangerous. Abortion has been legal in the United States since 1973. It was a hard-won fight, but it was indeed won. And now the Republicans want to take us back to those times where women made dangerous bargains so as not to be forced by the government to give birth to a child fathered by a rapist or by daddy. For women, that should be everything that this election is about." Signed, Al Babe. Now, he includes this. "Vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan says that he personally believes that rape is just another, quote, method of conception and not an excuse to allow abortions." What? Are you during an interview with radio station WJHL this week, Paul Ryan was asked his view about Representative Todd Akin, who recently asserted that women could not get pregnant from, quote, legitimate rape, end quote. WJHL reporter Josh Smith said, specifically, Mr. Ryan, where you stand when it comes to rape and when it comes to the issue of should it be legal for a woman to be able to get an abortion if she's raped? Ryan answered, I'm very proud of my pro-life record. I've always adopted the idea, the position that the method of conception doesn't change the definition of life. The method of conception doesn't change the definition of life. But, he went on, let's remember, I'm joining the Romney-Ryan ticket, and the president makes policy. And the president in this case, the future President Mitt Romney, has exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother, which is a vast improvement of where we are right now. Do you understand what he's saying? That rape is just another method of conception. That rape is just another method of conception. MSNBC's Steve Bannon noted that responses like this were probably the reason that Romney is now refusing to take any questions about Congressman Akin or abortion. Bannon wrote, quote, in this case, when Ryan says the method of conception is irrelevant, he's talking about rape. In other words, the Republicans' vice presidential nominee clearly believes a Republican government should force women to take their pregnancy to term if they are impregnated by a rapist. Republicans can only distance themselves so much from Todd Akin before we realize they share his views. Rape, just another method of conception. Wow.
If you want a place in the history books, then do something dumb before you die. Nobility are famous for no reason. Mary Antoinette enjoyed her cake. She caused a revolution when she would not share, and her husband lost his head for that mistake. The Hindenburg was a giant zeppelin. Its makers made a minor oversight. Before they built it up with explosive gas, they should have fixed the no-smoking light. History is made by stupid people. Clever people wouldn't even try. If you want a place in the history books, then do something dumb before you die. Tally ho, tally ho. Our king and country
walk down the aisle on her finger.
Radio Right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
I am the promise never broken.
21 past the hour. After the next break, we're going to do trivia. Podcast trivia, where you can win a one-year subscription to the Malloy Show. Podcast downloads, commercial free. All you have to do is get the right answer to our multiple choice question. And it's yours, retail value of $56.40, which averages out to 25 cents a program, which is why we call this a two-bit radio show. You may find this interesting. The Guardian of the UK has reported today about an arrest plan already put together by the British authorities should Julian Assange step outside the Ecuadorian embassy. Now, the way this came about, a photographer for the Guardian of the UK took a photo of a court bailiff or whatever they call them in the UK who was carrying papers, and it had to do, apparently it was a hearing or something about what to do next with Assange. And the photographer got a picture. The picture was blown up, and guess what? And the picture is on, if you go to guardian.co.uk, you'll see the court person or the law enforcement, whatever it is, you'll see an officer holding a document with instructions to arrest WikiLeaks founder, whether he leaves in a diplomatic car or a diplomatic bag. Now, I don't know how they would do that unless they have huge bags to... I have no idea how this madness works. But here's a story from The Guardian, the UK. Plans to seize Julian Assange, quote, under all circumstances, end quote, the moment he leaves the Ecuadorian embassy in London, have accidentally been revealed by a police officer. Okay, it's a police officer displaying restricted documents outside the embassy. The document, which you can see under the officer's arm by a press association photographer, appears to advocate arresting Assange, whether he leaves the building in a diplomatic bag or in a diplomatic car. The handwritten plan was recorded at a police briefing and only partially covered by the officer's arm as he arrived at the embassy today, Friday. The brief begins, brief. EQ, Embassy Brief, Summary of Current Position Regarding Assange, Action Required, Assange to be arrested under all circumstances. It then makes reference to a dip bag or a dip vehicle. No smart aleck comments. Okay, that means diplomatic. Scotland Yard spokesman said, quote, the document in one officer's notes from a the document is one officer's notes from a briefing. Our objective is to arrest Julian Assange for breach of bail. Under no circumstances would any arrest be made, which was in breach of diplomatic immunity, end quote. Why, of course not! The document under the officer's arm was just a ruse. It's just something to divert attention. There's nothing here. Move on. The UK government has made it clear that Assange will be arrested if he steps outside the embassy. And his diplomatic immunity is obviously not going to be respected if he comes out in a dip car or a dip bag. Speculation has been rampant about possible escape routes. Oh, my God. And Assange's legal team and the Ecuadorian government have talked about the possibility of safe passage to Ecuador. I wonder if they brought a helicopter, if the UK government would shoot it down. You know, the Ecuadorian helicopter violated our airspace. Really? Okay. So would they shoot down a helicopter? Would they do that? Ambassadors from several South American countries went to the embassy, Ecuadorian embassy, today to show their solidarity with Ecuador. The British government has threatened, under an act passed in 1987, to enter the embassy and arrest Assange, but Foreign Secretary William Hague said there is no intention to storm the building. And, of course, Ecuador's president has said this diplomatic row could be ended tomorrow if Britain gave Assange safe passage to South America. You know who is behind this. You know the Brits don't give a goddamn. They don't want this kind of problem right now. You know the Swedes don't give a goddamn. They don't want this kind of problem right now. Besides, of the two women who originally filed the complaints of sexual relations without a condom or whatever the hell it was, one of whom, it's my understanding, I don't know what the updates are, but it's my understanding several months ago that one of the women said, no, you know, forget it, drop it. And another woman moved to Israel. That doesn't mean anything. She could have moved to Morocco, but it happens that she moved to Israel. So you know what is going on here. You know it as well as I do. We'll be right back with podcast trivia. Stick around. again for a podcast trivia where you can win a one-year subscription to Molloy Program Podcasts. Commercial free in your email every day, except for the days when everything goes to hell and we can't record anything, or the days when we're struck by lightning, or the days when the equipment fails. Other than that, it's always there. You can put it on your whatever and listen in the car. You can listen in the shower. You can listen anywhere you want. All you have to do here is get the right answer to our podcast trivia question, and it is yours. Who's first? Sheldon in Madison, Wisconsin, who, do you really listen on the mic at midnight?
Yes, I do.
Do you really?
Well, yes, I do. And you're ruining my work. It's terrible.
I'm sorry, Sheldon. Well, thank you. Thank you for that, for hanging with us, even though they moved us to the graveyard.
Thank you for doing what you're doing, and we really appreciate it.
Well, are you ready to play?
Absolutely.
Okay, here we go. Oh, a little loud on the music there. All right, Sheldon, here's your question. As Rush Limbaugh, the grandfather of radio insanity, drifts ever closer to his approaching senility, he declared earlier this week that Barack Obama was responsible for which of the following? A, the weather reports on Tropical Storm Isaac heading for Tampa. B, the mental breakdown of Missouri Republican Representative Todd Akin. C, the increase in the number of deaths in Texas from West Nile virus. Or D, the rising cost of cheese.
That's really, I listen to Rush Limbaugh. So this is really going to be...
No, I don't listen to him either, but it was out there in the news.
Oh, God. Okay, could you repeat it one more time?
Sure. As Rush Limbaugh, the grandfather of radio insanity, drifts ever closer to his approaching senility, he declared earlier this week that Barack Obama was responsible for which of the following? A, the weather reports on Tropical Storm Isaac moving toward Tampa. B, the mental breakdown of Missouri Republican Representative Todd Akin. C, the increase in the number of deaths in Texas from West Nile virus. Or D, the rising cost of cheese.
I don't have a clue. I'll guess A.
A? You got it. Okay. Yeah, the latest... the latest on that story was that Limbaugh said that the only reason the weather service was saying that hurricane or tropical storm was heading for Tampa, they did so at the direction of President Obama because President Obama wanted to cause panic and anxiety and deep problems for the Republican convention that'll be held there starting this coming Tuesday or Monday. So, you know, the man is just insane. And no, I don't listen to him either.
No question about that. But just think about this. When am I ever indebted on the same moment to Mike Molloy and Rush Limbaugh?
When what? Say that again.
When am I ever indebted at the same time for the same thing to Mike Molloy and Rush Limbaugh simultaneously?
Right now.
That's right.
Right this moment. All right, Sheldon.
Hey, Mike, again, keep up the great work. Thanks very much. Thanks for this.
All right.
And I will listen to you, but hopefully at more reasonable hours.
I hope the day will come.
And one question I had. A couple of weeks ago, you were talking about Vermont and the F-35, and you were saying, remember, there were all of the progressive people like Bernie and Peter Welch who were supposedly tolerating the F-35 and the noise problems, whatever. You were going to look into it, and I don't know that... you ever find anything, because I haven't.
Well, the only thing I found was the original report that quoted the congressional delegation, and that included Bernie Sanders, that the F-35 being built in these plants or whatever in Vermont was good because they needed jobs. Now, no one has refuted that, and I haven't seen any further reports.
Right.
So it was very upsetting.
Sure.
Maybe someone listening to this now, now that we've brought it up again, maybe somebody has some information. But what I had appeared to be from a reliable source or a reputable news source, if that's not a contradiction in terms, and it seemed to contain quotes from Sanders. So I don't know. I don't know.
In any case, thanks again. Appreciate it. And I guess I'll wait for Kathy.
All right. Thank you, Sheldon. I'm going to put you on hold, and Kathy will get the pertinent information. And thanks for listening. Thanks for the loyalty to the program, and thanks for playing podcast trivia. Who's this? Oh, my God. Granny T in Jackson, Tennessee.
Well, hey, Mike.
Well, hey, Granny T. I haven't seen you since the last time we had a massive rat killing.
well, we can do it. I'd be fairly well-educated for, you know, one of us southern race traders, you know.
Yes, ma'am.
Moved off to Memphis in 79 out of sticks, and then, uh-huh. I mean, 69, then... My husband finished college down there in 72, chemical engineer, and then we went to the really big city of Houston, Texas.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, listen, I better stop for a second and tell people what that phrase, race traitor, means.
Oh, well, you can say the N. Better not do that.
No, well, I can't do it that way, but here in the South, a race traitor is a white person who believes in equality among people, and that the way certain folk have been treated in the South is just not right. And as a result of that, they're referred to as race traitors.
But anyway, Mike, I love your show. You and Cassie do a great job, and you were talking last night about how did we feel about just packing up and
leaving the country? Yes.
Yeah. Well, I felt that way often. You know, Vietnam and all that. I was 17 years old when JFK got blown away. You know, all that stuff. So I felt several times through the years like that. But anymore, you know, man, I think this is about the biggest. I'll put a few cuss words in here. The biggest damn mess we've been in, and I don't know what to do about it. I'm okay, you know. I'm gliding into the sunset, but I sure do worry about my grandchildren. Both my children have college degrees and are doing well right now. But boy, my grandchildren. I worry.
I know, and I have the same concerns. I have grandchildren like you do, but I also have an 8-year-old daughter also. So, I'm real concerned about it. I have friends now, as you well know, who have moved to British Columbia, moved to Canada.
Yeah.
I have other friends who have moved to Belize and Costa Rica, and the same. I get the same comments on a pretty regular basis. Malloy, what are you doing there? Why do you stay? And I don't know how to answer that except, the old fallback position, which is, it's home,
Well, that's true, and fortunately we did get back to the sticks here, and my family, we've been farmers around here since the 1800s and own quite a bit of property, fortunately, and so I guess we'll just have to, compound in here, I guess, man. But I tell you one more thing. I so especially enjoy church night. That's my upbringing. Southern Baptist Sunday morning.
Well, then you know about Wednesday
night. Wednesday night training union and Wednesday night prayer meeting.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
It's a hoot, man. I love you guys.
Thank you, Granny T. And listen, stay in touch. All right.
All right.
Thank you, ma'am.
Bye bye.
All right. Take care. Yeah. Yeah, Southern Baptist, I don't care. You know, Granny T was in Tennessee, and my Southern Baptist experience was in Ohio. It doesn't make any difference. You could be on the moon. If it's Southern Baptist, it is the same thing. And I guarantee you that Granny T and I had the same hymnal, And I'll tell you something else I bet she had that we had in my grandmother's church, and that was those fans. They had like the big popsicle stick on the end, like take a popsicle stick and been flattened out and made bigger. And the fan part was a local funeral home. Right, Granny T? This local funeral home. And it had one of those pictures of Jesus in Gethsemane. And, you know, with his face uplifted and his hands folded, on a flat rock, and Jesus is praying. And on the back of that, or underneath that, was the name of the local mortuary, the local funeral parlor, as we used to call them. And, anytime you'd walk into a Southern Baptist church that was not air conditioned, and I think they kept them air conditioned just to give you a little taste of what hell was going to be like, if you didn't repent and ask Jesus to forgive your sins and, you know, get washed in the blood of the Lamb, so you had to have those fans. But every one of those damn fans that I ever saw had the name of a funeral home on it. And that used to, I'll tell you, when you're 8 years old, that just used to freak me out.
If you're not this angry, then you're not paying attention. Back to Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Mark Arata. His message, support Mike Malloy's Take No Prisoners radio program, as well as Mike Papantonio's Ring of Fire, Norman Goldman's Justice is Served, Tom Hartman, and those who speak truth and oppose the country's move to fascism. We need your voices at this critical time in America. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for the sponsorship, and I appreciate the message, too. Mark Taylor Canfield is in Seattle with Occupy. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mike.
How are you?
Good. Keeping it lit in Seattle.
Good.
Yeah, it's always good to hear you on the air. It's always really, it's nice to hear Kathy's voice too when I call in. She's so such a pleasant person to talk to. I appreciate that.
Yeah, she is. She's always pleasant.
Well, I have some reports for you, but I had a quick question for you too before I do that. There's a major conference going on in Detroit, but I know I talked to you once before about the radio theater stuff, and I'm wondering if you guys are still doing that. Are you still recording those?
Recording the what?
The radio plays.
Oh, yeah, the Radio Gumshoe? Yeah, matter of fact, we have a script here, the latest one from Bob Alexander. We did one, when was the last one, Kathy? 3-4 weeks ago? They're posted at our website, the ones that we've already played. There's a bunch of them. Just go to MikeMalloy.com. They're there. The script that we have now, we just did not have time to get to it this week. And I think Bob and his family are going on a brief vacation up into the wilds of Canada. So it's probably going to be another week to 10 days before we have it up. But, yeah, we like doing those. It's a lot of fun. I vaguely remember radio like that from when I was a wee lad of indeterminate age, but I like doing those. They're a lot of fun.
Well, I remember we had a conversation one night, and I think I called in for some, I'm about ready to do it again if I'm not careful, but I called in to talk about something political, and we ended up spending the whole night talking about radio plays.
Right, that's right. That's right.
I'm really into it. I really like the idea.
Oh, good. Good.
As a writer, I find it's really a creative thing to do.
And it is. Bob Alexander is, he's got the credentials. He's a former writer-producer in Tinseltown And the stuff that he does, these little scripts that that he provides for us, we just find them very, very creative, very amusing, and a lot of fun to do. And they're just fun. So we'll keep doing them as long as Bob keeps churning out the scripts. All we have to do is, you know, be the players, be the actors. He produces and writes them. So all the effects, all the everything that you hear, other than the voices, are Bob's work. We do all the voices here.
Well, I'll trade you some links, because I actually have been doing some animation of some political satire. It's called Occupy London.
And all right.
Started in London with a British theme, but it's also moved to the American political elections and the occupiers here. And I pretty much take a shot at everybody. You know, I mean, I make fun of everyone from the occupiers to Mitt Romney.
Well, good. I'd like to see it. Let me just clue you in. We got about 2 minutes left.
Okay, I better do my job.
All right.
Well, in Detroit, starting on the 23rd, we are having another Midwest Occupy conference. The first one was earlier this year in St. Louis, and unfortunately, the police attacked some peaceful demonstrators, and 14 people were arrested, so I hope that doesn't happen in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an ongoing series of conferences, regional and national conferences, that have been happening this year. There's been at least a dozen. I mean, they've been everywhere, from Des Moines to Gainesville, you know, just crazy.
Right.
And so this idea that the Occupy movement is dead, I'm just going to quote Mark Twain again, you know, the rumors of the death of the Occupy movement have been greatly exaggerated. The truth is that people are very, very organized now. There's an interoccupy.net website. Interoccupy is serving as a hub for all the national groups. There are conference calls going on all week long.
That's inter, I-N-T-E-R?
Yes, inter.net.org. They own both of those. And there's all sorts of offshoots from there that people
now,
can
get involved. Wait a minute. Let me get this right. Interoccupy, interoccupy.net.
Correct.
Okay, got it.
So those are where a lot of the national and international conference calls are going on. And so we've been talking to people in Iceland, and we're talking to folks from Tampa and Charlotte this week. And I feel sorry for them, Mike, because they're such a small Occupy group. Both of those groups are so small. They're kind of in Occupy territory, if you know what I mean. They're sort of in the red states. So I feel sorry for them, because they're going to have, you know, potentially thousands of people showing up there at the protest, and there's probably like 10 people in each group that are actually there to help organize. So good luck to them. But I just wanted everyone to know that the Occupy movement is alive and well. If you went to interoccupy.org, what you would find is that there are so many events happening around the country, mostly on a local level, but leading up to September 17th, which is the one-year anniversary of the Occupy Wall Street movement, and the folks in New York City, they're already saying that they're going to try to reoccupy Zuccotti Park, so we'll see what happens with that. But everybody around the country is still working really hard. I mean, people are spending a lot of their time and energy in their personal lives on this stuff, and they're taking on fracking, they're taking on union issues, tax reform, citizens united. You name it. So I just want to give a shout out to all the people around the country doing that. Keep up the good work.
That's a good thing. We're just about out of time for this hour, Mark. Let's chat again, okay?
Yes, I'll keep you updated, no problem. And check out my animation, and I'll check out your plays.
All right, Mark. Okay. Take care. Thank you. Interoccupy.net. All right. Coming up next hour, do y'all know who Eve Ensler is? Good. And because I have something she posted I want to share with you. It's pretty intense. And also, one of our listeners sent me an email that I got to share with you. I don't want to give you his name or where he lives, because this is a family matter, his family, and I don't want to, you know, cause any disruptions, but it was one of his siblings who wrote to him and sent him something. And it's a little old, this thing, but it still applies. So stick around. More fun and frivolity coming up. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Yeah, I can't talk about that anymore or take any phone calls about it, really. The country is involved in a nervous breakdown. And, okay, so all the shootings that occur here are not directly related, but in a sense they really are. So, anyway. I got an email from, I don't want to say his name or where he wrote from because he got something from a relative, an email from a relative. And the relative apparently is, well, my emailer here says he's a knuckle dragger from, I'm not going to mention that state either. And my emailer says, normally I ignore these, but this guy actually called me a traitor not too long ago. His ideas obviously are different from mine. Odd that, since I spent over 8 years in the Navy protecting his lard ass. Anyway, so he's, my emailer sent me this thing that his brother had sent him. And I want you to hear this. And I guess I shouldn't be so cautious about naming the names and the states and everything, because obviously the guy who sent this onto my emailer would no more listen to my program than he would cut his own throat. But let's just leave it at that. I just get nervous about naming names sometimes. It's entitled Something to Think About. It starts out by saying, please note that Texas is the only state with the legal right to secede from the Union. Reference the Texas American Annexation Treaty of 1848. We Texans love y'all, but we'll probably have to take action if Barack Obama wins the election. We'll miss you too. Here's what can happen. First, Barack Hussein Obama is president of the United States and Texas secedes from the Union in the summer of 2013. George W. Bush will become the president of the Republic of Texas. You might not think that he talks too pretty, but we haven't had another terrorist attack, and the economy was fine until the effects of the Democrats lowering the qualifications for home loans came to roost. So what does Texas have to do to survive as a republic? Well, first, NASA's just south of Houston, Texas. We will control the space industry. Two, we refine over 85% of the gasoline in the United States. Three, we have over 65% of the defense industry. The term "don't mess with Texas" will take on a whole new meaning. Number four, oil. We can supply all the oil that the Republic of Texas will need for the next 300 years. What will the other states do? Gee, we don't know. Why not ask Obama? Natural gas. Again, we have all we need, and it's too bad about those northern states. You Yankees will have to figure out a way to keep warm. Computer industry. Well, we lead the nation in producing computer chips and communications equipment. Small companies like Texas Instruments and Dell and EDS and Raytheon and on and on and on and on. Seven, medical care. We have the research centers for cancer research, the best burn centers, and the top trauma units in the world, as well as other large centers, health centers. The Houston Medical Center alone employs over 65,000 people. We have enough colleges to keep us getting smarter. University of Texas, Texas A&M, Texas Tech, Texas Christian, Rice, SMU, University of Dallas, University of Houston, Baylor, UNT, Texas, Women's University. Ivy grows better in the South anyway. Number nine, we have an intelligent and energetic workforce, and it isn't restricted by a bunch of unions. Here in Texas, it's a right-to-work state, and therefore it's every man and woman for themselves. We just go out and get the job done, and if we don't like the way one company operates, we get a job somewhere else. Number 10, we have essential control of the paper, plastics, and insurance industries. Number 11, case of a foreign invasion, we have the Texas National Guard, the Texas Air National Guard, and several military bases. We don't have an army, but since everybody down here has at least 6 rifles and a pile of ammo, we can raise an army in 24 hours if we need one. And if the situation really gets bad, we can always call the Department of Public Safety and ask them to send over the Texas Rangers. Number 12, we are totally self-sufficient in beef, poultry, hogs, and several types of grain, fruit, and vegetables. And let's not forget seafood from the Gulf. Also, everybody down here knows how to cook. All that stuff, so it tastes good. We don't need any food. 13, 3 of the 10 largest cities in the United States and 23 of the 100 largest cities in the United States are located in Texas. And Texas also has more land than California, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Massachusetts, Maryland, Rhode Island, and Vermont combined. 14, trade. 3 of the 10 largest ports in the United States are located in Texas. 15, we also manufacture cars down here, but we don't need to. You see, nothing rusts in Texas, so our vehicles stay beautiful and run well for decades. Well, that just names a few of the items that will keep the Republic of Texas in good shape. There isn't a thing out there that we need and don't have. Now, to the rest of the United States, under President Obama, since you won't have the refineries to get gas for your cars, only President Obama will be able to drive around in his big 5-mile-per-gallon SUV. The rest of the United States will have to walk or ride bikes. You won't have any TV, as the Space Center of Houston will cut off satellite communications. You won't have any natural gas to heat your homes, but since Mr. Obama has predicted global warming, you'll not need the gas as long as you survive the 2,000 years it'll take to get enough heat from global warming. Signed, the people of Texas. P.S. This is not a threatening letter, just a note to give you something to think about. Sleep well tonight. The eyes of Texas are upon you. Now, the funny part, see, this was written before the 2008 election. The only thing they changed in it was that first one where it says Barack Hussein Obama is president of the United States and Texas secedes from the Union in the summer of 2013. The original was Texas secedes in the summer of 2009. So, very interesting, and thanks to my emailer for sending that to me. I saw that way back before Obama. See, the part they leave off here is Texas is, first of all, it caught fire. If anybody remembers, Texas caught fire last year. Goddamn near burned to pieces. Number two, all those industries are just laying people off. Hell, computer parts made in China and Vietnam now, boys. As far as your hogs and food and everything, nobody to tend them because y'all are dying of West Nile virus. Y'all are dropping dead in the streets like a bunch of goddamn rabid dogs. As far as water is concerned, your water is totally polluted. You ain't got no water left. And the part that was really funny to me is you talking about all that seafood you get out of the Gulf of Mexico. Obviously, this is written before the BP gusher just kind of cut loose and ruined every goddamn thing, isn't it? As far as your weaponry and your guns are concerned, you're absolutely right about the Texas Rangers and the Texas Air National Guard and the Texas this and the Texas that. But I'll tell you what. I've been to Texas. I know what it's like down there. I'll tell you right now. One battalion of Army Rangers come down into Texas, and hell, you folks would be throwing your arms up and leaning up against the wall within about 5 minutes. So looky here, Texas, if y'all want to secede from the Union, y'all go right ahead. And I'll tell you what, I'll bet you within about 5 minutes after you secede, the Mexican military is going to come and take their goddamn country back. You think? Signed, Mike Malloy, Yankee. Woo, that's a knee slapper. Y'all watch out for that West Nile virus now and that global warming. Nah, don't worry about it, boys. Since you wrote this letter, y'all have had heat waves that have wiped out, well, just about half your farming and all your hogs, most of your cattle. How is it down there with the temperature 116 degrees in the shade? And second, what the hell y'all doing in the shade to begin with? Hope it gives you hell, hope it gives you hell. Now where's your picket fence, love? And where's that shiny car? Did it ever get you far? You never seem so tense, love.
cleaning up America one flying monkey at a time. Here's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Do y'all know who, I gotta start talking like that after pretending to address, the morons in Texas. Not like the people in Texas who listen to our program. No. And we have several, and they call this program frequently. And I love them and respect them, and, they are to Texas exactly what I am to Georgia. So, you know, I don't mean to mock everybody in Texas at all any more than I mean to mock everybody in Georgia. We just, you know, whether we're born here or not, don't forget, I have a wife and a child and a son who were born in Georgia. So, you know, it's difficult for me to, yeah, I said, wife, that's you. And Molly and Chris. All three of you were born right here in the Atlanta area. So, you know, you can't get more Georgia than that. So it's not the decent people in the state of Texas or Georgia or Louisiana. We have listeners all over the South, white and black listeners who, hate the fact that their state or their governor, I'm one of them, is such an ass, such a total ignorant savage. We have listeners in Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee. I get emails from white folks and black folks here in the South all the time who realize, you know, where we are, how the South is stereotyped, and for good reason, because it is the bedrock of so much ignorance and stupidity in this country comes out of this region of the country. And those of us who live here know it a hell of a lot more than people who don't. So my mocking the people in Texas is certainly to be taken in context. I realize that there are a lot of good people all over the country, especially here in the South, who stay here. A lot of people say, well, why do you stay there? Why not? Why not be a fifth columnist, so to speak? Why not be here in the belly of the beast and observe and report on this craziness? And a lot of my correspondents are in the South are people who were born here, who've been here for a couple of generations, perhaps, or who moved here. And they are in the South, but and in a sense, part of it. I would say that my immediate family who were born here, my wife, my son, my daughter, are of the South. There's no way not to be. But that doesn't mean that they subscribe to the crazy ideas and the ridiculousness that comes with being a born Southerner. It seems to come with being a born Southerner. That's the stereotype, you see. So anyway, just that by way of explanation. I don't want our listeners in Texas and Alabama and Mississippi and Louisiana and South Carolina, you know, Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, Arkansas. How about Alice over there in Heelan Hollers? I mean, you know, Arkansas is damn sure part of the South, I think. So, rational people who live here in the South get what I'm saying when I say it, when I adopt that phony-ass Southern accent. And there, by the way, there's no such thing as a Southern accent. And that's another thing, that if you live in the South, you come to understand that. There's an Alabama accent, and that's broken into Northern and Southern Alabama. The people in North Carolina speak entirely differently. Western North Carolina, the mountains, from Eastern North Carolina, the shore. You have all sorts of dialects and accents and so on and so forth. So when people talk about a Southern accent, well, either they're displaying an ignorance about all that, or else they're just using shorthand, because there's no such thing as a Southern accent. There are people who live in Mississippi that when I talk to them, I can't understand what the hell they're saying. They might as well be talking a different language. And I've spent 45 years in the South. I understand these dialects and accents and so on and so forth. But anyway, I'm getting way off. way off track here. I'm sorry. It's just that letter from the people of Texas, you know, that was written, before the 2008 election. And, it was supposed to be a warning to the rest of the country not to elect, a Negro, as they would put it, in certain, quarters in Texas and Mississippi and Louisiana and Alabama and North Carolina and South Carolina, Georgia and Arkansas. And you know what I'm saying? Yeah, you know what I'm saying. All right, we got a break. When we come back, I want to share something with you. You know who Eve Ensler is? She's the one, the person, among other things, she's a Tony Award-winning playwright. She's a performer. She's an activist. And she's the award-winning author of The Vagina Monologues, which so far has been published in 48 languages and performed in over 140 countries. I've got a piece here from her that she wrote just the other day from where she's staying in Bukavu, Congo. I want to share it with you when I come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, right. 25 before the hour, Eve Ensler is the activist, Tony Award-winning playwright, performer, and the author of The Vagina Monologues, which has been published in 48 languages now and performed in over 140 countries. She has written a letter to Representative Todd Akin, who wants to be the senator from Missouri, a senator from Missouri. Dear Todd Akin, I'm writing you tonight about rape. It is 2 a.m. and I'm unable to sleep here in the Democratic Republic of Congo. I am in Bukavu at the City of Joy to serve and support and work with hundreds, thousands of women who have been raped and violated and tortured from this ceaseless war for minerals fought on their bodies. I am in Congo, but I could be writing this from anywhere in the United States, South Africa, Britain, Egypt, India, Philippines, most college campuses in America. I could be writing from any city or town or village where over 500 million women on the planet are raped in their lifetime. Mr. Akin, your words have kept me awake. As a rape survivor, I am reeling from your recent statement where you said you misspoke when you said that women do not get pregnant from legitimate rape and that you were just speaking, how did you put it, off the cuff. Clarification. You didn't make some glib throwaway remark. You made a very specific, ignorant statement, clearly indicating you have no awareness of what it means to be raped. And not a casual statement, but one made with the intention of legislating the experience of women who have been raped. Perhaps more terrifying, it was a window into the psyche of the Republican Party. You use the expression legitimate rape as if to imply that there were such a thing as illegitimate rape. Let me try to explain to you what that does to the minds, hearts, and souls of the millions of women on this planet who experience rape. It is a form of re-rape. The underlying assumption of your statement is that women and their experiences are not to be trusted, that their understanding of rape must be qualified by some higher, wiser authority. It delegitimizes and undermines and belittles the horror, invasion, desecration they experienced. It makes them feel as alone and powerless as they did at the moment of rape. When you and Paul Ryan and 225 of your fellow co-sponsors play with words around rape, suggesting only forcible rape be treated seriously, as if all rapes weren't forcible, it brings back a flood of memories of the way the rapist played with us in the act of being raped, intimidating us, threatening us, muting us. You're playing with words like forcible and legitimate is playing with our souls, which have been shattered by unwanted penises shoving into us, ripping our flesh, our vaginas, our consciousness, our confidence, our pride, our futures. Now you want to say that you misspoke when you said that a legitimate rape couldn't get us pregnant. Do you honestly believe that rape sperm is different from love sperm? That some mysterious religious process occurs and rape sperm self-destructs due to its evil content? Or were you implying that women and their bodies are somehow responsible for rejecting legitimate rape sperm, once again putting the onus on us? It would seem you were saying that getting pregnant after a rape would indicate it was not a legitimate rape. Well, here's what I want you to do. I want you to close your eyes and imagine that you are on your bed or up against a wall or locked in a small, suffocating space. Imagine being tied up there and imagine some aggressive, indifferent, insane stranger, friend, or relative ripping off your clothes and entering your body, the most personal, sacred, private part of your body, and violently, hatefully forcing themselves into you so that you are ripped apart. Then imagine that stranger's sperm shooting into you and filling you, and you can't get it out. It is growing something in you. Imagine you have no idea what that life will even consist of, spiritually made in hate, not knowing the mental or health background of the rapist. Then imagine a person comes along, a person who has never had that experience of rape, and that person tells you that you have no choice but to keep that product of rape growing in you against your will. And when it is born, it has the face of your rapist, the face of the person who has essentially destroyed your being. And you will have to look at that face every day of your life, and you will be judged harshly if you cannot love that face. I don't know if you can imagine any of this. Leadership actually requires this kind of compassion, by the way. But if you are willing to go to the depth of this darkness, you will quickly understand that there is no one who can make that choice to have or not have the baby, but the person carrying that baby herself. I've spent much time with mothers who have given birth to children who are the product of rape. I have watched how tortured they are wrestling with their hate and anger, trying not to project that onto their child. I'm asking you and the Republican Party to get out of my body. Get out of my vagina. Get out of my womb. Get out of all of our bodies. These are not your decisions to make. These are not your words to define. Why don't you spend your time ending rape rather than redefining it? Spend your energy going after those perpetrators who so easily destroy women rather than parsing out manipulative language that minimizes their destruction. And by the way, you've just given millions of women a very good reason to make sure you never get elected again, and an insanely good reason to rise. Eve Ensler, Bukavu, Congo. Of course, I'm sure that when Eve Ensler wrote this, understanding the context the country, the society that produces a piece of garbage like Mr. Akin, then she also understands that come Election Day in Missouri, there are going to be tens of thousands of women who will vote for him. And I'm sure Eve Ensler also understands, as most of us do, that even though the Republican Party is going to present as part of its official platform the suggestion that laws should be put in place in total defiance of everything Eve Ensler just wrote, and consequently, there will be tens of millions of Americans who will vote for that. So, the power of Eve Ensler's words notwithstanding, I think you and I understand where we live. And I think we also understand that we live in a society that can produce a Todd Akin, that can produce a Paul Ryan, that can produce these right-wing destroyers of every single thing that would be considered sacred or holy or worth not destroying. And that as a result of that, as a result of the fact that we live in that kind of a hate-filled, ignorance-saturated hothouse, or as Greg Palast called it, armed madhouse, that we have a massive percentage of our population who is so ignorant, stupid, willing to be led by these monsters, there is a good chance, if good is the right word, that Todd Akin is going to be the next senator from Missouri. And that Mitt Romney may be the next president of the United States. This is how far we have fallen. Of course, a lot of people may consider it to be the natural consequence that comes as a result of trying to form a country on millions of bodies of indigenous people and people snatched and brought here as slaves. Tough one, eh? Truth seekers? Dodging glances on the train. Talking about me, I can hear them whisper, and it makes me think there must be something wrong with me. Out of all the hours thinking, somehow I've lost my mind. But I'm not crazy, I'm just a little unwell. I know right now you can't tell, but stay a while and maybe then you'll see a different side. About 10 before the hour, and it can flip from someone with as powerful a voice as Eve Ensler to an agency with as moderate a voice as the New York Times. Times had an editorial a couple of weeks ago, Republicans versus Women. And in that editorial, they point out that the Republican spending proposal revives some of the more extreme attacks on women's health and freedom that were blocked by the Senate earlier in this Congress. And the resurrection of this is part of an alarming national crusade that goes beyond abortion rights and strikes broadly at women's health in general. You know, and that's true. This is another one of those things I don't understand, except for the fact that it has its... It is rooted in religious hatred. The three religions, three peoples of the book, or religions of the book, the Abrahamic religions, every single one of them in their own way, some, one or two of them more overt in certain areas than the other, hate women. Just absolutely hate women. And I think part of that is because they understand that the unrestricted or unbridled power of women would devour their asses, would eat every one of their religious avatars for lunch, would utterly and absolutely destroy their patriarchies, and then set some sort of rational civilization on this planet that would be about life and not about death. The Abrahamic religions are all about death, destruction, murder, mayhem, and as a result, they have to belittle, denigrate, or destroy the sex that is the creator of life, not the destroyer, the creator. And that would be women. Even to the point where all three of these Abrahamic religions destroy women at the very beginning of their holy text by declaring that women came out of the body of a man. Jesus Christ, I mean, right at the very beginning. And that Eve, known to the Jews, Christians, and Muslims alike, that Eve was the one who unleashed sin and death on the human race. All of these religions hate women. Now, their hate is so virulent and so vile that they attempt as sort of a counterweight to that to say, no, we glorify women. Look at the Virgin Mary. Virgin Mary, who was a rape victim. So, if you try to find the genesis of this woman hatred that's in the Republican Party, don't look for it politically. Look for it in the fact that the Republican Party is now the Christian Armageddonists, the Christian Taliban party in this country. And their primary objective is to destroy creation. And in order to, you know, in order to step up to what they think is their God waiting with his arms open to welcome them to paradise, actually he's waiting in this fantasy world with his mouth open and his fangs bared, waiting to rip these sons of bitches into bloody chunks and then spit them into the universe. They don't quite understand that. But in order to make that leap up to their great and glorious murderous God, they have to destroy the creation that's found here on Earth. And women, being the creators, are the ones that have to be destroyed, have to be denigrated, have to be reduced. It's really sick. And I don't like it. I don't like it at all. You know, I had a mother, I had a sister, I've had daughters, I have a wife, and I understand, I truly do understand why religious fanatics have to try to destroy women. And it is an issue of power. It's an issue of creative power, something that men will never quite understand. So many aspects of nature. The male is nothing more than a servicer of the queen of the colony, or the spider, or the ant, or whatever, or the scorpion. And once the male performs its function, its head is ripped off and devoured. which is probably the way it should be. Although I don't want to think of Kathy ripping my head off and eating it after we begin the initial stages of having produced Molly. But you understand what I'm saying. This is all rooted in religious contempt and disgust, because all religion is based on contempt and disgust, hatred, inequality, viciousness, and death. I hope you're not part of any of these cults. I really do. And if you are, because your brain was washed and scrubbed when you were a kid, please try to free yourself from it. Okay. I think I hear the music. Do I hear the music? I think I hear the music. There it is. I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. Say goodnight, Kathy.
Goodnight, Kathy.